No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype your questions in to BBS Radio 1. Tonight, we're going to talk about D.C. statehood and what's going on, because it's the beginning of the year and we're off to a new start, a slow start, but a new start. And we have with us a very special guest, Karen Rose, who is with D.C. for Democracy and has been an analyst of things on Capitol Hill. And of all the people I've worked with in the 8 years that I've had the job as senator, I don't think there's anybody that understands the legislative end of what's going on with statehood as well as Karen does. So I'm very excited that we have her with us and that she can help explain some of the stuff that's going on. And before we bring her on, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is back in Washington, D.C. Now, I don't know if Kathleen qualifies as a homeless person, because sometimes she's in Kansas, sometimes she's in Arizona, sometimes she's in Washington, but she's got to find a place and stick with it. Are you with us out there, Kathleen?
Yes. And to tell you the truth, what I'm doing is feeling the pulse of all the different areas in our great country, talking about statehood and educating people on what's going on and how this is probably the last area. Well, there's always issues of civil rights, but this is a huge one. So I am doing the work out there in the field for you, Senator.
Thank you. Thank
God.
I'm
glad I'm here to remind you, you know, of what I do.
Because I only have a little pulse left, and it's going quickly. So I'm glad you're out there feeling the pulse of the nation. You know, as you may know out there, America, or maybe you don't know, our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, has introduced legislation once again to make the District of Columbia state. The new Columbia Admission Act was introduced in the 114th Congress, and we have with us tonight Karen Rose, someone who knows Capitol Hill better than I do. So let's bring her on and talk a little bit about the new old legislation and see where we're going and what's up and what we can expect out of this whole thing. Karen, are you with us?
I'm here, Senator. Good to be with you tonight. Yes,
thanks
this
for
is,
being here.
Well, thank you for thinking of me. And, you know, I have been thinking about this statehood legislation. You know, Congresswoman Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton is entering her 25th year as D.C.'s representative in Congress. And during that time, the statehood bill has, you know, it's been around, but she introduced it this year with the most co-sponsors it's ever had. And
I know it, that there's 94 co-sponsors or introducers.
104.
It was 104 yes. co-sponsors.
Now,
but 94, right? That originally introduced it with her.
Including her, there was 94. It was her right. And 93 additional, and that's and the, it's pretty, you know, basically all Democrats. But it's more than half of the current Democratic caucus is now a co-sponsor of this legislation. It's one of the most co-sponsored bills introduced this Congress so far. There are 188 Democrats in the House this Congress at this point, and to have to right out the gate 93, and that doesn't even include a couple dozen who were on the legislation from last Congress who haven't renewed yet. So it's looking like it's going to get a good significant support in the Democratic caucus, and that's a real achievement.
That's great. And Kathleen and I just had a meeting the other night where we're going to where we discussed going to the DNC winter meeting, which is coming up next week.
Wondering about that. That's interesting.
Yes.
So yes. Would this be thinking in terms of a resolution for the party to support DC?
Yes.
Resolutions
from the caucuses. For example, last year we got the Hispanic caucus and the environmental caucus and the black caucus to all sign on to resolutions in support of DC statehood. For, as you know, Karen, we went through a terrible battle in 2012 to get statehood put back in the platform.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. Isn't this the arena to actually introduce a resolution for statehood, right, that gets put into the platform in 2016?
You have to start that process now, and the winter meeting is the big, kickoff meeting for the year. Senator, you and I have attended some of the sessions, and they have breakout committee meetings, and the Rules Committee is one that we would go to, and the Resolutions Committee is one you would go to put forward the resolutions, and not to get too inside baseball, but Donna Brazil has always been very supportive of the DC resolutions. Is she still on the resolutions committee?
Karen, I don't know if she's on the resolutions committee. We have to check on that. But she still is very much involved, and I can assure you she's not on the resolutions committee. She's on one of the other important committees that we care about. So we certainly will be approaching her and other people, and just trying to get the sentiment inside the district, inside the Democratic Party, that this is a positive thing for the party to support. We have lukewarm support. We've always had lukewarm support in the Democratic Party. In other words, they support it. What I like to say, it's like world peace. You know, when you ask people, are you for world peace? They say yes. But then when you say, well, what have you done to, work for world peace? It becomes a different thing. So that's what we're saying to the Democratic Party now. We know that you believe in statehood for the District of Columbia, but what are you going to do to help us get there and get it?
And let me explain to the listening audience that what we're talking about is every party, like the Republican Party, will be having their midwinter meeting. I think they already did, didn't they? And so will the Democrats this end of this month in Washington, D.C. And so delegates from all the states come to the midwinter meeting and, kind of get prepared for the next convention. And that this resolution for statehood would be introduced and the delegates, do they vote on, they accept the resolution and then they would, before the convention actually meets, then they would include it in the platform? Or do they do that a couple of months out before the convention?
There's the platform committee is another committee as well. But that's why you have to start now to get through the process. You get the support on the committee, and then they present it during the, formal sessions of the conference. There's four annual meetings of the party during the course of the year, and there's always one in Washington in the winter meeting, and then various other places the rest of the year. But they, you know, there's a formal session, and then you have the breakout committee sessions. And but you have to be on the agenda. You know, you have to go through the internal organizational process. And if there's delays or whatever, you need to make sure you're ahead of the curve a little bit. So going, you know, that it's in D.C., it's a no-brainer to go and try to get support. And to bring it back to the statehood bill, you know, there are, based on the co-sponsors of the legislation, they represent districts in 33 states and four territories. So that's something that is a, you know, that's a fact that there is support in 33 states already for this DC legislation. So bring that to the meeting and talk to the DNC committee members from those states and inform them. They need to be educated, you know, because it's a new crew every time.
Right.
Well, and that's a really important point. I don't know if people out there understand that, but part of our problem is that 80% of America thinks that we have the same rights that everybody else does. DC Vote did a poll about 10 years ago that showed that 80% of the people in America support the idea of the district having equal rights, but 80% of them also already thought that we did have equal rights. So getting the word out among the states and letting people in the state party, even the politically astute people that are members of the Democratic state committees across the country, that's an important thing for us.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, I think it is very true. And so I think that the other thing, and Karen, I'm going to bring this up, you know, these are my opinions and my opinions only. I know Michael thinks that I believe everything he says and do what he wants. But you know me, Karen, I'm like on my own and I say what I want to say. One thing that has hit me resoundly, you know, I'm kind of like an outsider. I've been involved in the senator's campaigns and kind of know the fight that he's been doing all this time. And the one thing I find interesting is that what I don't hear among activists or the city council is an acknowledgement of all the people who vote for the delegation. Like, I know that Senator Brown had 207,000 votes when he ran in 2012. I think Paul Strauss had 189,000 votes. I'm not sure what Franklin Garcia, but I think it was pretty high also, if I'm not right, like in the 90s or something.
No, over 100. Yeah,
well, over 100. So, you know, that's more than a lot of city council members combined. That's more than the mayor has gotten. Yet it doesn't seem to be
a lot more than members of Congress get.
Right. Oh, you said there was there were six other senators who got less votes than what Senator Brown got. What I don't understand is, to me, the voters have sent a clear message to the city council, to activists, to groups involved in this, that they feel important enough to vote 207,000 of them in one election, 198 for another, whatever. And yet, it's like when I see the agenda of everybody who's involved in statehood, that's never mentioned. Nor is it, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, we have a shadow delegation. Oh, yeah, they, you know, kind of like, oh, ho, ho. These guys get a lot of votes. And to me, what happens, what I see is people saying, well, you know what? Your vote really doesn't count because we don't think it's going to really happen. We don't really acknowledge these guys that you vote for. A city council doesn't even really fund them properly and tries to mess with how it's supposed to be done. So as an activist, I'm very involved in that. Can you explain to me, an outsider, why that is?
Well, I think it goes back to people don't really understand what, people vote. They go into the voting booth and they vote for the shadow delegation, but they don't really know what the role of the delegation is. And, you know, not to be cynical, but In the District of Columbia, even though we have a population of more than two states, Vermont and Wyoming, we have a city council that has 13 elected officials. That's it. That's and a mayor, and now the attorney general. Those are the elected jobs. You're looking over your shoulder. You see somebody who's got, you know, three times more votes than you. They might be after your job.
Right. I mean, that's very true. I think that's true.
But, you know,
there's
a lot of truth to that.
It's internal politics. But, you know, it's something I think about. If we, you know, with statehood, you get, you know, the council becomes the legislature. One thing I haven't done is how many elected representatives are there in Vermont or Wyoming? More than 13, I guarantee.
Yeah.
Running those states.
And, well, we know in New Hampshire, right, Karen?
That there's 400.
There's one less than there is in the United States House of Representatives, 434.
I've been saying for a long time we need to have more, you know, more seats on the council, but you know, that gets kind of lost in the. That's not really a ripe idea. But to get back to the point about the shadow delegation, I think it was Congress actually up until 2008 prohibited D.C. from using local money to promote lobby, if you will, for statehood. The shadow delegation could not expend a dime in support of its of DC democracy legislation. That rider got dropped in 2008, but part of it, so that, you know, part of it is legacy too. It's legacy. The role of the shadow delegation, if you think about it, had been curtailed, and you know, the rules changed, but it's still in the old ways. You know, we need to get a line item in the DC budget to fund the delegation and
right.
You know, make it a more viable, visible. And
you know, for me, look, the funding of the delegation obviously is very important to me, but an even bigger issue for me is that it's we really have no strategy. You know, I mean, it's not just the delegation, it's the entire strategy of the movement, where we get together and we all kind of go in different directions. You know, I come up with ideas. DC for Democracy comes up with ideas. Josh Birch, who's an activist, comes up with ideas. The city council comes up with ideas. You know, they march up to the White House and say, put the license plates on. But we have no cohesive strategy between all the groups. And part of the reason for that is because we don't have the funding. If we had some funding, maybe we could, have some direction. I guess I would see my new role as the Attila the Hun of the movement, you know, getting the Mongol tribes together so we can all move in the same direction against our common enemy.
Herding cats. It's herding cats.
Yes, it's herding cats. It's certainly. But it's herding cats who are tough and smart and
I know.
And
we have a
lot,
good bench.
You know,
we do have a good bench, I have to say.
But I do think that those people that vote so much, like for Senator Strauss, 189,000 people, I don't believe that they don't know anything. I mean, I think most of them do. Otherwise, they wouldn't even vote for the shadow delegation. If they really didn't understand what they did or what they were there for, they do vote for them because I think they do want statehood. And that somehow means something for statehood. What these guys do, no one really knows.
I would imagine that voters do not realize that there's no funding for the delegation.
Right. Oh, I'm sure they don't mention.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And the other thing is these guys run just like if they were running for senator in any other state. It's a campaign. They have to raise funds. So, you know, it's amazing to me that, that there's such a disconnect.
Maybe we should do a public initiative calling on the.
Yeah, I think so.
Why that? Do you mean a referendum?
Yeah. Well, it would be initiative.
Prohibited. You can't.
It would start before, to a public. Well, you need like 30,000 signatures.
And you can't in the District of Columbia. You're not allowed to pass a referendum of any sort that requires the District of Columbia to spend money. So that's how they get around. For example, we couldn't go out and say, you know what? We don't think you're spending enough on the schools with $800 million. We think we can't pass a referendum that says you have to spend $1 billion on the schools. We can't. You can't do anything that requires them to have to expend. You can't have a referendum that requires them to expend money. So that's a problem for us. But let me ask you, back to the legislation, why is it important? I mean, this is what we hear a lot, and we know the answer to this, Karen, but I think you can explain it a lot better. People come to me all the time and say, well, why are you bothering with this now? Because you've got a Republican House and you've got a Republican Senate. You're never going to get this through this Congress. And I think we've all accepted that. But why do we push for the legislation in spite of that?
Well, it's an interesting, you know, to consider that despite the fact that, going back to Delegate Norton's been in the House going on 25 years, only eight of those years have the Democrats have been in the majority in the House, and yet we have more support than ever for this legislation. Why is that?
Yeah.
It's because of what has been happening. The disregard for D.C. home rule through, you know, noxious acts of Congress that has really galvanized the members, particularly in the Democratic caucus, who support the legislation. They see what anything less than statehood is insufficient because it's not permanent. When you have a congressman from Texas telling D.C. how to, you know, write its gun laws, or when you have a congressman from Maryland telling D.C. That it can't enforce its marijuana legalization laws because they can, and they write the laws so it only affects D.C. It doesn't affect their district, their state, or anybody or any of their colleague states, but it's because they can, and it's just a construct of 200 and, 50 years ago. I guess it was 1800 before that, when D.C. became the federal capital, it was 1800. And since then, the district has been the population of the city then, it wasn't even a city, it was very rural, was only about 5,000 people. So and most of them were not white male landowners, as I understand it.
Right.
So, voting rights and representation, it wasn't as much of a concern, a priority as it is now. But we see, we've tried to govern the city, responsibly and based on the needs of local, citizenry, and Congress still, feels quite liberal in its, prerogatives to interfere with local home rule, and the party that is most intrusive is the Republican Party, who ostensibly are the small government, don't tread on me party. But when it comes to the District of Columbia, it's a way to get curry favor with prospective supporters, you know, financial supporters, if you will, without any consequence to your home district.
Well, we say that all the time. You know, that's an important point.
But there's a track record. You can look at it. I mean, right. You know, it's in legislation.
And if you're from Texas and you want to curry favor with the NRA, and since in Texas, you know, they already have pretty liberal gun laws, you come to a jurisdiction like the District, you know, you come to the District of Columbia, one, because we have tough gun laws, and two, because you get national attention. I mean, if you attack the gun laws in another state, yeah, you don't have the national media there, and anything you do in the District of Columbia, you know, gets attention. And it's funny that you should mention, you know, how the Republican Party, you know, the party of small government, and they're supposed to be non-obtrusive, because Eleanor Holmes Norton just last week introduced the what do we call it, Karen? The something paper reduction act for budget autonomy. Legislative autonomy, because all our bills have to go up and sit on Capitol Hill for 30 or 60 legislative days, and
or
45?
No, 35 if you change the home.
Oh, 35. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, the idea is that causes a lot more paperwork, and these guys that are supposed to be for reducing paperwork and government waste and interference by Congress, they ought to support a bill called the Paper Reduction Act. But they don't.
I know. It's interesting. It's interesting to and going back to the point of why this statehood bill has so much support now, another interesting thing to think about is that last Congress there had been two other D.C. democracy voting rights bills that were less than statehood that you know, in the past some members had supported, so the delegate had introduced them as well. This year those bills have gone away. It's only the statehood bill. It's only the first bill she introduced was the statehood bill. The second bill was D.C. budget autonomy. The third bill is what you were just discussing, the legislative autonomy. And in addition to getting congressional support, the legislation, statehood in particular, has picked up. The president has acknowledged support. D.C. statehood, Attorney General Holder has supported it.
Former leader in the Senate,
Harry Reid
from Nevada, Harry Reid, yeah.
Which is exceptional that he would not only endorse a bill, but actually co-sponsor it. In the Senate, the Senate companion statehood bill has not been introduced yet. It will be soon, presumably. Last Congress, it ended with 21 senator sponsors, one-fifth of the Senate. I mean, that's a, you know,
Carper held the hearing, yeah, first time
that you testified at.
That I testified at, yes. but you know, that was a milestone for us, too. It had been 20 years. And we'd never had a hearing in that time. And so, yeah, I think there's great movement, and which you point out, Karen, and something that everybody has to keep in mind is that 2 years from now we'll have a new Congress, and 2 years after that we'll have a new Congress, and 2 years after that we'll have a new Congress. So in a battle that's gone on for 214 years, 2 or 4 or 6 or even 8 or 10 years doesn't seem like a great expanse of time. And I think we're moving. I mean, I don't know if you're in the mood to make a prediction here, Ms. Rose, but I think in the next 10 years, this is going to happen.
Oh, I've heard. I think you're right. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say recently that I know here in D.C. it's not going to happen in my lifetime. It's not going to happen in my lifetime. But, you know, look what how many people have said that and so many things have happened in their lifetime. Right. So, you know, one thing I think that and maybe I see it because I've been away for so long, is that I've never seen the flag flown in so many places. I mean, Michael and I were talking about it when I left in 1987. I got here in 1977, and I guess Home Rule had just kind of gotten in, right, Michael? You were saying, like, in the 70s. And I never remember seeing a D.C. flag. Now, that's all you see. You know, you see the D.C. flag everywhere, and people are in the streets embracing statehood. They see they don't want these guys messing with them all the time. And I think, you know, when you had the shutdown of the government last year, and it shut down D.C. being able to have police and firemen and pay the teachers, and thank God they had a surplus that they could pay them. But these are the things that are just wrong. And I think that maybe there's a critical mass, I really feel, that's building. And it's just a matter of what do you do to organize it, capture it, to help move you through, because it's really going to have to come from the people. It's not going to come from the city council. I don't care what anyone says. Those guys, you know, why do they want another level? They can't see, you know, that it could be a good thing for them too. They just see that it might, in my opinion, encroach on their ability to have power or make decisions.
Well, you know, a civil rights movement has never come, as far as I can see it, really from the government. It's really come from the ground up, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like the people in Alabama got together one day and said that segregation is a bad thing and we should change it. It was the Montgomery bus boycott. It was not riding the buses for well over a year. You know, we give Rosa Parks the credit for doing that, but it was really the people that refused to ride the buses that made it happen. And in a meeting, I've said this before, in a meeting with Eleanor Holmes Norton, she told us, nothing is ever generated within the walls of this building. It all comes from the outside. And I think that's true in government in general.
Well, you know, the symbolism of the D.C. flag, I think, really is power. I think it really does resonate more so than a lot of other state flags, honestly. I mean, people really, as a symbol. You know, I kind of always feel like if there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. Even though with D.C., some of the main obstacles are, you know, there's constitutional technicalities. That can all be sorted out. It's not impossible. And it's just, if there's a will, there's a way. But I think also this the innate unfairness of the current situation is what really people get that. And it goes to, like, what you're saying, Kathleen. You know, like, you think about just how long ago gay marriage was, like, not even remotely plausible. It's a fairness. People, regardless of what your disposition is, people get that, and this is not, you know, this is just, it's a government construct. It's not something that cannot be fixed. It just needs
the will of the people.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know what? We have a caller on line one. Can we see if she has a question for Karen or for us? Go ahead, Bonnie. Are you there?
I am here. I just wanted to let you know, and I would ask a question, and maybe I will, but I don't know what you're talking about because I still don't get any. I can't hear you on any of my computers.
Oh no!
And I talked to the fellow before I got on here, and I told him that I was having the same, you know, the problem, and I tried every way to get onto your show, and I can't get onto it.
Okay. Well, Wanda, do you have a question on statehood? We're talking with Karen Rose, who's has been a longtime activist. Is there anything that you would like to say or ask?
I guess in the opinion of Karen, why do you think that people in the district don't really care?
I'm I'm sorry, I just got reconnected to the call. I missed what you were saying.
Oh, okay. Bonnie asked the question, and I think this is a good one. We all have an opinion on this, but we'd like to hear your opinion. Why do you think we can't motivate people in the district to care about this? You know, we have, I know that you've been to many rallies that we've had, Karen, and, you know, a couple hundred people show up. We have a population rapidly approaching 750,000 people, and we get 200 people, and you and I, Karen, could walk around amongst those 200 people, and we would know 150 of them, so because they're the same people that come every time. So why do you think that is? Why do you think we have such a hard time motivating people?
You know, it's a stumper for me. It's always been since I first arrived in D.C. after college, I could never understand why there wasn't more outrage. I honestly, it is a stumper for me, because when you do speak to people, they do care. Maybe it's just the overwhelmingness of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's part of it. That statehood is a very big word, and they think of it as something that's much more involved than it actually is.
And when you think about it, the last two states to enter the union were 1948, and
right.
You know, that's have to be in your 80s now to remember that to have been a voting
age. Were in 58 and 59.
Oh, I'm sorry, 58. Right. I said 48. I meant 58. Hawaii and Alaska. And you have to be, I guess, up in your 70s then by now to have a voting age appreciation of the significance of that. It's as though the 50 states is in stone, and that's the way it is. And you know, it's a very heavy lift. Well, it is kind of a heavy lift.
Yes, and
what? It's a heavy lift, and there are. 10 or 15 Republicans that live here that would rather not pay taxes. And frankly, I'm a Democrat, but
right.
If we don't get the same rights as everybody else, then why should we pay taxes?
Well,
I have an answer to this.
Yeah, go ahead.
If D.C. didn't have people taxes, everybody would live in D.C. and the housing and the rental rates would go sky high. You couldn't afford to live here anymore.
That's right. And Senator Brown,
very true.
Senator Brown, who happens to own a house right on the D.C. line, would just make a buku amount of money. But we've tried that.
There is legislation. There is a congressman from Texas who introduces, I don't know if he's going to do it again this Congress, but in the past he has introduced legislation.
Louis Gohmert, smartest man on Capitol Hill.
I appreciate his sentiment in his take on that. I mean, he didn't have to. He doesn't have to do that. But he believes.
And it's actually interesting. It really is that option. If they're not going to give you guys acknowledge the rights that's given to everybody else, then you shouldn't pay taxes. But you're right.
Absolutely.
Everybody would be running here. You know, everybody would be in.
And
Michael
well,
could charge
and
man
and then
on
they
every
would
room.
Figure out the right that we
Eleanor
should be
Holmes
in state.
Norton.
But
Eleanor Holmes Norton actually put in legislation to that effect, and it never went anywhere. So I don't think they're going to let us off the hook on taxes. But we're going to go take a short break right now. Karen Rose, if you want to stay with us, we hope you will. If not, we understand, and we hope you come back soon. But we're going to take a short break, and we're going to play for you a classic by Nina Simone, my favorite song, one of my favorites, called I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. This goes out to Karen Rose and the many hundreds of people, thousands of people who have worked on the statehood movement over the past 200 years. We'll be back in a minute. Sorry, we had a little technical difficulty there. Evidently, the internet doesn't like Nina Simone as much as we do. But thanks for filling in with a little music there, Doug. And we're back with Karen Rose. who's an expert, in my humble opinion, on everything statehood on Capitol Hill in the district, in Congress for the District of Columbia. So Karen, we've all heard, and we know you've heard too, that they're going to reintroduce, that Carver's going to reintroduce the Senate bill, companion legislation. We hope it's sooner than later. He can't, it's my understanding, you correct me if I'm wrong, can he hold another hearing? My understanding is he cannot.
Well, because the Senate is now not, you know, it's a Republican majority now, they set the agenda. What may be possible, though, when I used to do hearings on the House side, although I was in the majority at the time, we used to do field hearings. And I know I did a field hearing out across Anacostia on a local issue once. And the rules for doing field hearings are a little different. I think it might be worth looking into what the rules are. Now, the Senate rules, committee rules, are more than likely very different than what the House rules were. But it may be something that could be done under special arrangement.
Well,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, it really is a great idea. Because you kill two birds with one stone, I think. If we could get some senators to hold a field hearing, you would, especially if it was in a large public venue, we could probably get a lot of local people to show up, and that would be a good thing. We had a record crowd for the Senate hearing that we had in September, I think, but it still was not a particularly large crowd. But, you know, maybe we could hold a hearing at some really large.
Well, and then also in the House, the Democratic caucus has last Congress held special meetings. They did their own hearings on a few issues that they could not get House leadership to sign off on. That's another if the Senate Democratic caucus would initiate a field hearing. I mean, that's also another, I don't know that they do that kind of thing by tradition, it's something to make inquiries about. But in the meantime, speaking of the Senate, I want to read you a quote from a senator from a small state of Delaware. Like D.C., Delaware only has one representative. It's an at-large representative in the House of Representatives, although Delaware's representative has full voting rights. But the senator, Coons, who is now going to be the ranking member on the Appropriations Subcommittee that has jurisdiction over D.C. budget, he recently said this. He's also a co-sponsor of the D.C. statehood legislation, by the way. He says this: residents of the District of Columbia should have the right to decide their city's budget, make their own decisions about how their city should be run, and have voting representation in Congress through statehood. The district deserves to govern itself free from members of Congress's personal political agendas. As long as I'm on the subcommittee, and especially in these next 2 years as ranking member, I will work to ensure the voices of the district's 650,000 residents are heard loudly and clearly in the appropriations process. We don't have a senator, as you know, with any voice in committee, let alone on the floor. This is huge for the citizenry, but people don't know that who Senator Coons is. Maybe we can go to him and ask him how he would propose focusing, putting more of a spotlight on the D.C. legislation in the next Congress.
Well, it
when
is
you say ranking, I'm sorry, Michael. Michael,
yeah, go ahead.
When you say ranking, do you mean that he's a Republican?
No, but the Democrats are in the minority now, and ranking.
Right, so I thought it was a minority.
Yeah, ranking.
Oh, okay.
So he's now the minority. He would have been the he would have been the chair of the subcommittee of the Dems, but he's now ranking. But he's a voice. It's the D.C. committee, subcommittee. I guess it's a Financial Services Appropriations Committee. Through a weird anomaly in history, D.C. appropriations is parked in a bigger bill that is broadly concerns financial services, believe it or not. And it's just the way it ended up. And so that he made a specific statement on behalf of D.C. on that as the, you know, that committee's jurisdiction. And, you know, he's taking the leadership position for D.C.
Was that this year or was that last
year?
Yes,
that's just recent. This is January.
January. You know, a lot of people make this mistake. They don't really, when they look at changing policy, go to the appropriations committees. And those really are the most powerful because those are the guys that deal with actually funding things, you know? And you, I think that's another really good idea you brought up because, you know, so many organizations go to more of the policymaking committees when it's really appropriations that really you're going to the heart of the matter.
Well, you make an interesting point that appropriations is not technically a policy legislative committee. It's a, you know, a spending committee, but more and more the spending bills have riders, and for DC appropriations, DC's budget, same thing. The way Congress intrudes in DC home rule is by applying riders to the appropriations, which in the past you used to be able to call a point of order against because it's out of order. You're not supposed to legislate on appropriations, but they do. The House has made it pretty routine. But because they do that, it goes to the argument that the delegate Norton is making that we need to just do away with the congressional review, give us legislative autonomy because they never use the congressional review authority they have anyway. They would rather put a rider on an appropriations to tell DC it can't spend money on abortions for poor women. It can't use money to, you know, implement the legalization of marijuana, things like that, rather than when D.C.'s council and mayor sends up a bill to Congress, they have, as Senator Brown was saying earlier, they have 30 days or 60 days to look at that legislation, and if they don't like it, to, you know, deliberate, do a resolution, pass a resolution that then also the president has to sign. It doesn't happen. It's not an easy thing to do. If you stick a little rider on a big appropriations bill, a must-pass appropriations bill, it's easier to get the riders through than a resolution telling D.C. that they don't, that the Congress doesn't like their law. So, but because the congressional review process is in place, it gunks up the works for D.C. I mean, the city spends a lot of man hours, pushes a lot of paper before legislation, before law goes into effect because of it has to go through the congressional review period. And it costs a lot of money. And in fact, it goes to Standard & Poor's for instance, sometimes looks at this as a burden on city governance, and it goes to our bond rating. It can literally affect the city's bond rating.
Well,
because they never do it, the congresswoman is making this argument, and what the senator was saying, you know, it goes to a Republican argument, paperwork reduction. You know, what's a, you know, you support that?
Well, and, you know, it's such a burden for the district because who's going to stand up passing a budget that affects their constituents? Who's going to stand up for the District of Columbia when they put a rider, when, you know, the thing that stands between
right.
them and passage of the bill is a rider against the District of Columbia? I mean, we have the famous incident in which Senator Brown, among 72 other people, was arrested and in my case, convicted when President Obama said, I'll give you
abortion.
Yeah. Right. And he said that to the Speaker of the House. You know,
and you know what? To this day, D.C. can't expend that rider. Is the only one that really is. And in fact, another reason statehood. We really need. Well, a couple things. Appropriations is an annual. We do this every year because it's the one thing about the riders, they only last a year because the legislation has to be renewed every year. Whereas a policy bill can be permanent. So, you know, there's a trade-off there. But I kind of lost what I was going to say about the
Well, the two things that you know, first you said the about the policy initiative, but it certainly is something that the appropriation, as you point out, only twice in 40 years have they exercised the legislative option to take away our legislation that's been passed by the district, but for the appropriations committee, this is a regular thing to put appropriations rider.
Well, I was gonna, I remember what I was going to say. The thing about the abortion rider, it's every year, but it says the way it is now, DC can't use local or any money for our local laws to implement our local laws. What the House just did in one of their first bills of the session, it's their annual ban abortion bill. They have a provision in there that only affects D.C. It says D.C. is a federal agency for the purposes of the legislation, and that's to permanently ban abortion in the District of Columbia.
Well,
and just changing, because they can change the status of D.C. from a district to a federal agency. You cannot change a state to a federal agency.
Right, and that's just outrageous that we're treated like a federal agency. Well, I see we're out of time. I wish we had another hour with Karen Rose. I hope we'll have one.
And let me add this, Karen. It wasn't so bad coming on air, was it? It went really fast, and it's pretty easy.
You
so
need
we
a two-hour
right?
show. You need a two-hour show.
Right.
It's true, we do.
Well, maybe we'll do that in the future. And thanks for tuning in, America. Karen Rose will be back with us at some point. Thank you, Karen. My considered opinion is that we don't have statehood because you moved to New Jersey, and if you were here, we would have had it by now. But
my senator supports D.C. statehood.
I know he does. My former mayor.
Both of them.
Cory Booker. All right. Thank you so much. Both of them, right. Thanks for coming on.
Good night.
And we'll see you next
week.
Thanks,
America.
Exploitation, give the people their right to vote.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.